Kol HaLashon, the entire Torah, everywhere.
Hi everybody, welcome to Coach Menachem Bernfeld on this beautiful summer night. It's a long weekend for everybody, and thanks for coming. And tonight is Shir 194, and we want to first thank all the people for every week for promoting us and letting people know about it, posting on their statuses. It's a very big thing, you know, to let people know about the Shir. There's a lot of important things that are learned every week. And it's a Sichas Chaverim, a place to speak through things and really get clarity. So again, thank you for everybody for being part of it. Really appreciate it. If anyone wants to join the Coach Menachem's WhatsApp group, WhatsApp me at 732-314-1710. I'll send you the community chat links. I'll make sure I'm posted on the chat as well. You can also go to menachembernfeld.com and sign up over there to get his weekly emails with the speakers, the replays, and all that information over there. For all the people that are watching the replay of this on YouTube, please click on the subscribe button. You can also click on the like button. Every week, Menachem uploads the videos from Sunday night. You can see it live, right when it goes live. Thank you to all the advertising sponsors, Lakewood Scoop, Ellie and Ariel from Five Town Central, and Chayla Kapp from JCN. Again, if anybody's here the first time, every Sunday night at 9:30 on this Zoom ID, we have different shiurim, different topics, different therapists, Rabbanim. We've had it all over the years. So, next week, July 21st, we're going to have two very famous marriage therapists, both from Toronto, Rabbi Avram Kass and Sarah Chana Ratcliffe, who's world famous. They're really going to break down some key points of conflict in marriages. They've seen people 20, 30 years, they're doing marriage therapy. And we really want to clarify it. We're titling it The Key Differences and Points of Contention in Marriage Between Men and Women, Understanding Our Spouses on a Deeper Level. It should be a very, very powerful program. Please join us. And we'll really get into it. Okay, tonight's shiur is 194. We're going to start first with our gematria, Rabbi Noach Fried, to tie it into tonight's shiur. Let's go.
Shalom Avracha to Zoom Shir number 194, Unveiling the Power Within. In order to unveil the power from within requires a tremendous amount of wisdom, which leads us up for tonight's Gematria, 194 equals Meleim Chachma, full of wisdom.
Appreciate that. Okay, we're going to start off first with Menachem. Coach Menachem Berfel, thank you for putting this together tonight with Rabbi Daniel Schombach. IFS, a big topic. Oyelim's into it. People that know it. We're going to start like from the Aleph Beis. Nobody knows what we're talking about.
So
why are we here Sunday night? What are we trying to learn? What is this new phenomenon, this new concept? I've never heard of it. Explain to us. What is it?
Yeah, I won't be able to explain it because that's why we brought on Rabbi Daniel Schombach, Mitzvah Hashem, who'll explain everything. But I think we're hearing it more often and people are using it. IFS understands, you know, it must be something that works because people use it, and I'm excited to learn more about it. So welcome everyone to another Let's Get Real with Coach Menachem and Baruch Hashem. With a lot of Siyata Deshmaya, we know that these programs are only with Hashem's help every week after week. It's just amazing to see the feedback. Tonight we're doing number 194. And we're still getting feedback from 193 with Rabbi Heshe Kleiman discussing Hashgacha Pratis. It was fire. He was on fire. Just that connection that we have to have, that connection with Hashem, connection with ourselves, be connected in this world. Different perspective, a different way of living. And like we discussed, to start slowly, start with a journal, start seeing, open your eyes, see Hashgacha Pratis, see something. Write it down and start living with Hashem. I think the world today, especially, I think
Kol HaLashon.
Everybody sees Hashgacha Pratis. It's just amazing. There are so many stories out there, and especially now with the current event with the president, and we see Yad Hashem with everything. October 7th, many people see. You know, you just have to open your eyes and you see how Hashem is planning, I don't know what, but I'm trying to trust on him because I know he knows what he's doing. And sometimes we do have questions. Sometimes we don't understand, but hopefully, you know, to continue and to tap into the Hashgacha Pratis. Tonight, Mitzvah Hashem, we're going to continue. I think Hashgacha Pratis is something we can talk about. For example, many times people work on themselves. They go to therapy or they work on certain concepts and they feel they're growing, and then they turn around and sometimes they feel like they're starting from zero. There's something inside of them that feel that all the work they've put in is not working. And I think what I was thinking is maybe tonight we'll be able to understand that with the parts that we're going to talk about, maybe there's a part inside of you that's not ready for it. Or maybe, you know, one part has worked on it and you're growing, whether it's with your therapist or yourself, but then there's something inside that's not part of it. And that's interesting because what do you mean? Well, do I have it or I don't have it? So I think that's something that we're discussing, but it comes up a lot with our inner growth. Many people are aware of the concept of the inner child. Some are aware, some are not, how to connect to it. The whole concept of the self, who is the self, who am I? But I think in Mitzvah Hashem tonight we'll get a lot of information. Just one idea, one concept that I'm thinking of is to be able to zoom out, to back off, and to look at yourself. To see where am I? Where am I with my growth? What am I looking for? Where do I feel whatever I feel? When do I feel it? But who's that one that's seeing? Who's that one that's observing? So you're actually observing yourself. So you can zoom out, you can disconnect from yourself and look at yourself from the outside and do that cheshbon nefesh. Where am I? What's going on? What am I feeling? So that is not an easy concept for beginners for sure. It's a new idea, and you know, once people understand that, they can slowly get to that work to be able to sit down and to look at themselves, but to be able to disconnect yourself from all those emotions and all those thoughts that we have, and to be able to see the thoughts, to see the emotions, to look at it, and then we can discuss it. I think that's a powerful concept, which I think tonight we'll talk about, one of the concepts. And amidst Hashem, there should be a lot of siyata d'shmaya, and we'll hopefully, all those that are in therapy, to understand how they can use this concept, or maybe people are thinking of starting therapy, how it can help them in their life, and not only for those who need healing, you know, people feel stuck. It's a new concept of a way of living, moving forward. You know, where do I want to be in 10 years? What are my goals? And I think that's a concept we can use in Mitzvah Hashem with a lot of Sata Shmaya. Thank you, Rabbi Daniel, for being with us tonight, and Mitzvah Hashem should work out.
Beautiful opening. Okay, let's get into it. Okay, tonight's share we titled it Unveiling the Power Within, How Internal Family Systems, IFS, Therapy Heals Trauma, Addiction, Depression by Embracing and Transforming Our Parts. Rabbi Daniel Schoenbuch, I'm going to read his bio, and then the floor is his, and hopefully tonight we could all really learn some new concepts, hopefully some ideas, and hopefully we could run with it and start some self-healing. Rabbi Daniel Schoenbuch, MALMFT, is a renowned psychotherapist who works with individuals, couples, and families. He's authored 4 books, including Think Good and It Will Be Good, Spiritually Based Therapy Inspired by Viktor Frankl, and Jewish Wisdom, known for his empathetic approach, and he helps clients recover from trauma, sexual abuse, improve marriage and intimacy, and overcome codependence, narcissism, borderline personality disorder. He also treats anxiety, OCD, depression, and internet addiction. Rabbi Schoenbuch teaches techniques like CBT, EMDR, somatic experiences, IFS, ketamine-assisted psychotherapy. His training includes work with experts like Dr. Judith Beck, Dr. Peter Levine, and Dr. Sue Johnson, and his website is torahpsychology.org. Basically, in your bio, you cover the whole package, everything and everything. So Rabbi Schoenbuch, Rabbi Daniel, thank you for being with us tonight. Floor is yours. Let's get into it.
Thank you. It's just, first of all, so great to be here. And Coach Menachem and Rosher, I've been following your podcast for years. I'm just so impressed how you're helping, you know, so many parts in Klal Yisrael. People suffer from depression, anxiety, trauma. This is a great place to learn about these things and begin the healing process. As you mentioned, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and we treat both couples, families, and individuals with issues like depression, anxiety, trauma, and addiction. I practice most common therapies also, like cognitive behavioral therapy for anxiety, depression, emotionally focused couples therapy, EMDR, somatic experiencing, and what we're talking about tonight is internal family systems, or IFS. IFS is really quite different, and I'm glad you're talking about it. It has to do a lot with marriage and family therapy. We are trained to look at things in a relational way. So when somebody says they're depressed, usually the therapist will say, what are you depressed about? We'll ask the question, who are you depressed about? Because we believe there's usually some type of relationship. I also focus a lot on the works of Viktor Frankl, and I believe we have to use Frankl's work specifically that he wrote about in Man's Search for Meaning and his experiences in Auschwitz and helping people find more meaning in their lives. And that's what I do at TorahPsychology.org. Which brings us to tonight's topic, IFS. Now, IFS was created by a therapist called Richard Schwartz, also a family therapist, and he wrote a very popular book a few years ago called No Bad Parts. Just like a family, he says, has children, grandparents, aunts, and uncles, we also have different parts within us. Sometimes these are good parts, and sometimes these are parts which are in pain. He was bothered by several things, and this is why he created IFS. He felt there's this concept called monomind, that we look at a person in one way. So if a client goes to a therapist and says, I'm suffering from depression, the therapist may diagnose them according to the DSM manual that you have depression, you are a depressed person, or you're an anxious person. Dick Schwartz said that really, when we give somebody a diagnosis, we can end up really shaming them by giving them this label. And we're also neglecting other parts of themselves. So I can have anxiety or depression. I could also be a good person. I could be a loving person. I could be capable. But let's say a part of me is feeling depressed, or a part of me is, you know, feeling anxious. Just think about a person who has an addiction, and it's based upon the fact that he or she suffered from trauma as a child, and drinking is the whole way they, you know, they cope with their addiction. But we cannot say to the addict that all of them is addicted, that they're a bad person. We just say that some of the parts within them are having difficulties expressing them in a healthy way. And that was the basis of IFS. Really not a mono mind. We're made up of a collection of different parts. We see this concept in the Torah as well. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov says by the four sons in the Haggadah that the wise son, the wicked, the simple son, and the one that doesn't know how to ask, Rabbi Nachman says these are all actually parts within us. We all have a part of us which is in pain, a part of us which is wise, a part of us doesn't even know how to ask others about what we're going through. You look at the Tanya. The Tanya says we have two souls. We have the animal-like soul, Nefesh of Bahamas, and the godly-like soul. If you look at the Lashon that the Alter Rebbe quotes, he says Nefesh Elokis, the godly-like soul, is a chelik elokami malmamish. What does chelik mean? It means a part. So even Chassidus talks about having different parts within us. Some of these parts within us are more dominant. Some of them more passive. Sometimes they come out. Sometimes they lay around for a bit and don't act until somebody triggers us. But we could see people with more triggered parts, people with personality disorders, narcissism, people with trauma, people with significant depression or anxiety, usually have a part of themselves which is now activated. And what's most important, according to Dick Schwartz, is to understand that we have to still have a positive view of the person. You know, every child is born good. Take anybody in this class tonight, anybody around the world is born a little child. They're creative, they're kind, they're loving, they want to play, they want to have a good time. And let's say they have a father who's very disciplinary, screams at him, gives him a lot of potches, and he does it so much, the poor kid, what does he feel? He feels terrible, so he starts withdrawing from life. He eventually doesn't anymore express a lot of emotions, and he tends to withdraw. He develops a personality where he protects himself. Take that same child, and 20 years later, 30 years later, he's married, and his wife asks him to take out the garbage twice, and the second time, he feels angry at his wife. He starts yelling at her, and he punishes her by withdrawing. So we could see right there a perfect example of a part, a childlike part within, which becomes activated later in life. Take a girl who is already a bit on the anxious side, and she becomes a perfectionist, and her mother's like very, very critical. And later on, she develops an eating disorder because this part is punishing her and wants her always to be perfect. And, you know, none of us can be perfect all the time. So according to Schwartz, what's so different about IFS is really we don't have to get rid of these parts within us. Rather, we have to start listening to the parts within us and start respecting these parts and ultimately have these different parts within us play a different role. Why does he say that? Because if we don't allow that part of us to play a different role, if we don't really understand it and make it feel better, it's going to pop out somewhere else in our life. With our spouses, it can turn into an addiction, it can turn into a depression. Take, for example, somebody who helped stop drinking, and they stopped drinking, but later on they want to commit suicide. So Schwartz started noticing we didn't really address that part. We didn't give that part of themselves that was drinking, that was trying to protect them from the pain, to do something different in their adult life. Okay, so what do we need to do? We need to become more curious about ourselves. And I guess this is really the point for tonight. We need to become more curious. We need to explore ourselves. And we need to do this with real kindness. So IFS, according to Dick Schwartz, explains to us these different parts within us. And I'm going to share a little bit of a slide right now to help the audience that kind of understand, you know, what are these different parts within us. Now, the language of IFS is a little bit new for people. Might be a little strange. I suggest you be patient. It all makes sense when we start using the system. So let's look at the two major parts here. So the parts are as follows. They're called exiles is the part. Exiles are younger, more vulnerable parts of ourselves that we banish away, that carry pain that we don't want to face. So if we were potula as a kid, if we had troubles in school, we had learning disabilities, we have ADHD, if our parents got divorced, chas v'shalom, there was a death in the family, something traumatic happened to us, we feel terrible about it. And the human brain, what do we want to do? None of us can maintain our understanding of pain. We want to just repress the pain. We want to have a nosh. We want to watch something on our phones. We want to get rid of our pain. So the human brain tends to protect us by repressing that. According to Schwartz, what happens is we're left with this exile, this terrible part within us, and we feel the shame. We walk around unconsciously feeling fear, and we feel terrible loneliness with these parts. And so those exiles are just hiding around, and all it takes is something to trigger us, a bad event in the world, loss of a job, a little bit of a fight with somebody, and all these exiles come out. Now, how do we protect ourselves against those exiles, according to Dick Schwartz and IFS? We do that with what we call protectors. We protect ourselves against these terrible feelings that are in our exiles. There's two types of protectors. There are the managers, and then there are the firefighters. So what are those managers? And I'll give you some real practical examples, I think you'll understand. So managers are really just protective parts that work to prevent pain. So that little child who was potched by his father withdraws. So that withdrawing personality that comes out in his marriage later on, that's definitely a manager. Somebody that has to constantly work all the time. They become like an overworker, right? Somebody that becomes a pleaser. We know this term called codependence. They're caregivers to everybody else around them, but they don't take care of themselves. It could be depression. It could be a manager. It could be anxiety symptoms when you feel your heart racing, your stomach hurting, feeling nausea, or your legs are shaking. That could also be a manager to protect you from something that you don't want to experience. But those are kind of long-term things. They become personality traits, ways we communicate, the ways we withdraw from other people, or the ways we interact with other people. But let's say that it doesn't work and somebody really triggers us, really bothers us. Then the firefighters turn on. So what are the firefighters? These are reactive parts that work to just extinguish all the pain that we're experiencing. They just want to get rid of it at all costs. It has us do distracting things. Some people disassociate. We become numb. Or we self-soothe with other inappropriate things. Those are what we call these terrible firefighters. And of course, that's addiction. So addiction is the ultimate firefighter. If I can't deal with that, you know, internal pain, those terrible feelings, so what am I going to do instead? I'm going to simply drink them away. I'm going to get on my phone, and I'm going to, distract myself. So what's the real key here? So now that if you get these parts, and I'll just show this slide for another minute or so, the real key is to get to know oneself. And a therapist like myself or others that learn this will help you slow down in IFS and start noticing these different parts within yourself. We'll start looking at your exiles, your managers, and your firefighters. Now, the other thing Dick Schwartz notes is that there's other parts of us that are really great. You know, just because that kid became a withdrawer, or somebody's an addict, or somebody developed an eating disorder or personality problem, doesn't mean there's not a pintel of yid, a very sweet person underneath that. It's just been exiled away. They can't experience that goodness. How do we know we're re-experiencing our goodness? This is what Dick Schwartz calls the self. There's a part of us which is greater than the parts, called the self, which is able to look at the other parts. It's like an orchestra where you have different musicians. You have your cellos, your band members, you have your saxophones, you have your drums. The self is a part that can kind of orchestrate, listen to the other parts, calm them down, give them other things to do with their time. When we really get into the self, we can really start healing all the other parts around us. How do you know you're in yourself? Well, he gives these 8 different C's of the self. So when you're feeling calm, when you're curious towards your other parts, when you feel connected, or you feel this compassion, this inner deep compassion towards oneself, courageous, confident, creative, and clear. That's when you know that it's not the part that's you're blended with that's overwhelming you. You're actually in the self. So that's the introduction to IFS. And those are the actual parts that people will, you know, experience. And through IFS, we're going to teach you how to slow things down, take a deep breath, notice, stop feeling the terrible shame. And when we can do that more effectively, then we can start teaching you how to heal those different parts.
Okay. Thank you so much for the beautiful opening. Let's do a little bit of a poll. We'll get ready. Just 1 second. Okay, here we go. 3 question poll. Everybody answer to the best of your ability. Okay, first question. Hearing the idea of parts, how do you understand it helps a person with their challenges? 4 possible answers. Number 1, it helps them understand themselves. Number 2, helps them disconnect from the problem. Number 3, helps them interact with it to get the help it needs. Various, like, zooming in on it. Number 3, emphasizing on self-compassion and acceptance. 2nd question. Do you believe that a person is composed of different parts? Do you actually believe this whole concept? Do you believe a person is composed of different parts? And if so, what's the difference? Who cares? Yes, it helps me understand complex emotions. Yes, I believe people are composed of different parts. It allows them for more targeted healing. C, no, I think it's people are a unified whole, like if you're all good or you're all bad. Or D, not sure, I need more information. 3rd question, in what area of your life would you like to apply the concept of parts to help you? In what way do you think this could be helpful to you? Anxiety and depression, improving relationships with others, managing emotions and mental health, or option D, to have a better control of my reactions? Daniel, good questions?
Yeah, they're fantastic questions. Yeah, great questions. I mean, I think primarily the answer to the first one would be...
Let them vote. Let's not give it away.
Give them a chance, yeah.
Yeah, give them a chance. Let them vote. It's my hungry part eating now. Okay, we're going to end the poll in 1 second. And then we're going to share with everybody, okay? Here we go. Okay, the first question. Hearing the idea of parts, how do you understand it helps the person with their challenges? 35% of people believe it helps them understand themselves. 3% of people helps them disconnect from the problem. 42% of people believe it helps them interact with it, meaning the problem, to get it the help that it needs. 20% of people believe it emphasis on self-compassion and acceptance. Daniel, we want to comment anything on this?
Yeah, it sounds like your audience knows quite a bit intuitively about this. I mean,
it's time to pick up, you know what I mean?
Time to pick up, yeah. I mean, help them understand themselves 100%. When you see yourself as different parts, you could see why you do things that you don't want to do anymore. Where is this coming from? It usually comes from an exile, according to Schwartz. It's usually coming from some pain deep inside. And it's not coming from the point that you're bad, but there's something bad going on inside you. There's something painful going on inside you. And you begin to see this through certain behaviors, whether it's a depressive part, an addictive part, the part that has difficulty relating to one's spouse or one's children, So that's definitely going to happen during IFS. The third one is helps them interact with it 100%. I'll demonstrate for you shortly how you can have a dialogue with those different parts in a very kind and wonderful way. And that's where people really get the, you know, what they need more from their lives as opposed to hating themselves. It's also going to place an emphasis on self-compassion. We're looking, remember the self, one of the C's of the self is to have compassion. When you're feeling compassion for yourself, you know, when those different parts are listened to in a dialogue with them and you ask them like, what else do you want to do instead of being so critical? Or could you just take a break? But most importantly, when that part gets heard, as you'll see me demonstrate, you're really expressing a lot of compassion towards all of you and not denying a part of yourself.
Let's go on to the next question. Do you believe that a person is composed of different parts? And if so, what's the difference? 58% of people believe, yes, people are composed of many parts. It helps in understanding complex emotions. 31%, yes, it allows for more targeted healing. 0% think, no, people are, it's either you're good or bad. And 11% of people not sure need more information.
Well, so most people are agreeing with Schwartz that we're not what he calls the monomind. You know, we're not all just one thing. And then once we get out of the monomind, get to that part psychology and feel compassion towards ourselves, then we could start understanding all these, you know, complex emotions. Also, we could start healing our relationships, because if we get triggered by our spouse or our spouse triggers us, you know, and vice versa, then we could start being more compassionate. Maybe there's some pain there. There's an exile. Maybe I can learn how to express my needs in a different way as opposed to being getting critical. So I think the crowd seems to really understand that, you know, having parts is a lot more helpful than looking at you as just good or bad, for sure.
Okay, amazing. Because I really want, after the question, to really get into it, understand it, and really see how we can help ourselves with it. Good in theory, but let's see, Lamais, what we can do with it. What area of your life would you like to apply the concept of parts to help you? So this is just a general question people hear. You know, so people, 14% anxiety and depression, 22% improving relations with others, 41% of people here tonight, managing emotions and mental health. So that seems like the number one answer. And the fourth answer is to have better control of my actions. But very interesting, you could see, even though managing emotions and mental health is the number one answer, but there's across the board all four answers.
Yeah, so I think that third answer is where most people answer, 41%. They have it right on. It's IFS is about managing your emotions. How can I manage all these feelings within, and how can I orchestrate them so that different parts can feel better and eventually play a different role in my life, so they're not so either self-destructive or destroying people around me? So I definitely agree with the audience on that.
Okay. Let's stop sharing.
Okay. So if I could just read a question that came in, we can start. So here we go. I've been struggling with depression for a while. I've tried different therapies and modalities, but I'm still struggling. I feel like nothing is really working. How would IFS therapy help me, and how is it different from the other healing methods I've tried?
Well, that's a great question. It is very different. I'll maybe demonstrate in a few moments how I'd work with a client conceptually, and you'll start seeing that IFS is different than, you know, basic talk therapy. Like when I do cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, and I try to change people's perceptions of themselves, I work on their thinking traps. I mean, many people have gone through that with their therapist. Or even EMDR, which just deals with their past, and we try to desensitize people to their pain, their emotional pain, and so on. This is very different. It's a much more creative type of therapy. We ask a person to look into themselves and just notice different parts and ask those parts, you know, what they're feeling at the moment. And we start actually talking to the parts. This is what's really different about IFS. And I think if anybody's been through, basic talk types of talk therapy, IFS is really different qualitatively. It's a dialogue. There's a lot of theater in this. You see, each part of me becomes like a person that have feelings. So if I had that angry part, we'd actually ask you to identify it in your body, kind of notice. I mean, the audience could now, just if they just take a deep breath and just like relax for a minute and start noticing, you know, different parts. They could be experienced through parts of their body right now. So if anybody notices a stomach ache or a backache or a headache or something, that's probably some type of part, you know, expressing something to you that wants to be heard. It's probably some type of exile down there, and it's being protected from being experienced. And so we definitely talk to those parts, and we would talk to that pain in your head and say, you know, could you just for a minute, could you ask that part of your head that's hurting you? First of all, can we ask permission if we could talk to it? So it's a beautiful question according to Swartz. We ask permission. We fully respect the part as if that part of you is a real person that has feelings and needs and emotions. So I'd ask that part of you, so can I speak to you? And just go ahead and ask that part of you for a moment. And what's very important is don't force the answer. Just ask the question and just wait and see what emerges from that part. So your part may say, you know, I want to talk to you. Or the part may say, I don't feel like talking to you. And that's fine. Whatever your part says, we're going to be respectful towards the part. So to answer your listener's question, the truth is it's a really different type of engaging therapy, talking to parts, and I find it to be extremely powerful. It's really different than just simple talk therapy, which I also practice.
Even though it's talk, you're talking to the parts, but it's not talk therapy. It takes it to a deeper connection of, maybe you could explain it. It's not talk therapy.
It really isn't talk therapy. I look at it more as like theater. It's like playing these roles. Let's say puppet theater. We had different roles. If I ask you to hold on to a puppet that looks like your anger, and then hold on to the puppet that looks like your fear, and then talk to another puppet that expresses your fear, you know, your desire to be close to somebody. And let's say I had these puppets talking to one another, and I kind of respect each puppet and I have them express their feelings. This has been done for many years. Dick Swartz didn't come up with this in a vacuum. There's something called psychodrama, where you have different parts of a person are acted out in the room. People know about Gestalt therapy, where I'd have a part of myself sit in a chair next to me. I'd say, could you turn to that part right now and have a dialogue with that part? But Swartz does this all internally. Mm-hmm. I don't have to externalize it outside of myself. It could be experienced within the person as well. That's why it's different. And I also find people access parts of themselves they wouldn't talk about in regular therapy, in talk therapy. They're going to be accessed much more quickly through the dialogue and the respect and the compassion I show towards them. Great question.
Okay. There's a bunch of live questions. I just want to, I read this book. I just think it's a good picture. I'll illustrate if that's okay. Daniel, can I illustrate a picture?
Sure.
Okay. Let me just show you. I read this IFS book by, what's his name? His name is Tom Holmes. This is the one I showed you. Remember the other day we talked about it.
Yeah.
Let me just share my screen in a second. Not like it's here.
One minute. Not yet. Yep.
You can see it there?
Well, it's a lot of parts.
Yeah, so this is the front page of the book, but basically it shows how a person has many different parts in them, and this is just a picture of the beginning of the book, but let me go to the other one. Hold on, this is the other one. Now you can see this picture?
Yeah.
So this picture is like, this is a home, like a person, before a person comes home, she has a professional part, taking care of the baby part, studying part, the anxiety part, the dancing part. These are all the parts of the person, right? When they're coming home, like which part are they bringing into the dining room to their center self, which part not? So everybody has a little bit of these parts, right? So just giving a more like clear example of a picture, I can see pretty clear over here. And you don't know, like the cleaning lady part, the nervous parts, you see? Pretty clear.
Yeah, we have all these different parts. Some of us are parts of us. Let's say you had an ill parent as a child. Let's take an example. They were ill with depression, or they had an accident, they're physically ill, and the only way you could get attention is by becoming the caregiver in your family, right? So you find out that would work in your family, but then you're denying all your feelings for getting healthy attention like your friends get or they got. And it denies your feelings for when you start going on shidduchim and you have that part of you, that shamed part from your parent who wasn't well. And it plays a larger role in your life. You become the caregiver, and then you get into a relationship and a marriage years later. And you have a partner who has a temper issue or some type of addiction, and you can't assert your needs. You can't use what we call I messages. That makes me feel really sad or makes me feel angry. Instead, you kind of just give in to that spouse. And you could see how somebody could suffer in a marriage for years when they're not listening to that part within them.
Okay, Rabbi Daniel, let's go to some live questions, and we're going to go deeper into this, okay? Hi, sorry.
Hi. Thank God. I can see where this would be useful for, like, managing emotions, but I think of emotions generally more concrete. You know, I can learn to deal with, anger, frustration, or sadness, but what about a general, like, I tend to think of anxiety and depression as kind of more of a pervasive thing. It's not, I don't know if it's, as I say, something you could just talk yourself out of or wish away. I guess it may even tie in with other, maybe disorders like ADD, whatnot, but it's something that's, I made up a joke once, my brain has a mind of its own, but it's something that's kind of like more than just recognizing emotions. How do you deal, how do you deal with just a whole, it seems like a dominant condition?
Yeah, I mean, you do have general anxiety disorder, but the autonomic nervous system manifests itself through the fight or flight mechanism, as we know. You go into fight or flight. Mm-hmm. That's just one version of it. It could manifest itself in a part of the body. It could be a general feeling in different parts of the body. Mm-hmm. It could be your heart racing, but it's all expressive of some form of anxiety. But anxiety from what? You find somebody who's like 35 years old. Who gets into a panic attack about, his boss not being nice to him, let's say. But really, in actuality, it's not such a frightening situation. It's something they can negotiate, but they don't feel confident to do that because that part of themselves is still active. But this is what's really nice about IFS. We're going to talk to that part and say, something, thank you so much, that anxiety part, for playing that role in my life when I was a child. The only way I could survive is if I got a bit worried about what was going to happen to protect myself. So in IFS, we'd ask you, we'd say, could you turn to that part of yourself, that anxious part, and really thank it for playing this wonderful role in my life? Mm-hmm. But something? Right now, I find myself 20, 25 years later, and perhaps we could find another role for you right now, because the role you played as a child, mm-hmm. it's not as needed. Now, that part of yourself, again, we're going to make these into real parts, real people. The part of yourself is going to feel bad, your anxiety part. What is it going to do now? If you give up your anxiety, what do you do with all that time right now? Mm-hmm. So we're going to ask that part. We're going to say, would you consider stepping back for a minute? This is the self now speaking to the part. Would mm-hmm. you consider just like stepping back a bit mm-hmm. and let's see if we can talk to the other parts that you're overwhelming. And by the way, is there something else you'd like to do with your time? And it really becomes very creative in IFS. Would you like me to take you to a park right now in an imaginary way? Can I take you to the beach, just relax for a few minutes? Do you see how playful the therapy is? I'm actually talking to the part and helping it either meditate with it, in the park or on the beach. Can I give it?
Let's go back a little bit. Just to help people. I think this will be clarifying. Sure. So let's use a very practical example that maybe people can understand. Let's say people get a lot of anxiety before they fly someplace, right?
Yes.
Nervous, getting there, parking, time. So that's anxiety, right? People could usually realize that they're getting anxious even though they have everything working. But it's an reaction. It comes naturally, not like something that you can control. So you're saying, first of all, realize and feel that feeling in your heart that you're feeling.
Well, yeah.
Acknowledge it, that you have it, right? Otherwise, you don't get it all.
Right.
Then actually have a conversation with it. Say, okay, I know I have to be by the airport this amount of time.
Mm.
Why are you nervous? Let's play it out. And you actually have a conversation with it. And that's sort of going to relax, I guess, the anxiety of that part of you, right? That nervous, I got to be there 2 hours before the flight. Otherwise, who knows the end of the world?
Something really, really bad is going to happen. And for sure, you see, when you're very anxious, you're having a panic attack about going to the airport, you become one with your anxiety. You become one with it. There's no space. Viktor Frankl talked about this, creating a space between you and something else. It's that space you have to create. So when you're panicking and in this terrible panic state by going to the airport, you and your anxiety are one thing. You're just overwhelmed with it. But if you could stop and reflect and say, wait a second, let me look at all these parts within me. Okay, there's a part of me which is anxious. When I start doing that as a part, and I recognize and start talking about it, I kind of create some space. We call it in family therapy, we call it externalizing. So let me give you an example, Usher. It's a perfect example about the airport also. So instead of saying, I am anxious, or I'm an anxious person, I'm having an anxious thought about something right now. Part of me is thinking about something. But, there's another part of me which maybe this adult part, which is not as scared of that what's happening to you at that moment, and it calms you down. You just create some space when you recognize it's just a part, it's not all of me.
Okay, we're talking about, again, the first part we're talking about IFS is me talking to my part. We're not talking about the therapy part of it. We're talking about me engage with that part.
Oh, definitely. What we do in IFS is we teach you to engage with your parts. I take you on the journey in an IFS session. I'm there to help you, hold your hand, so to speak, to get you through, to learn how to talk to those parts. But I want you as the client to be able to talk to your own parts eventually. I want you to heal, go back to your exile, to the real pain, and be able to talk to it. And you say to yourself, that exiled part, like, what do you need? Is there something I could give you? Again, this is imaginary, of course, but it's very theatrical in nature. But I'm going to get you to learn how to talk to your parts. And I've worked on my own parts, and I've brought certain values or ideas to myself to cover myself in certain ways. And now, since I've done that work with myself through reading Dick Schwartz's book, No Bad Parts, and other things, I can just kind of call up that calmer part of myself and heal the anxious part more effectively, because I kind of like broke down the parts. So in IFS, we're going to teach you how to heal yourself. That's okay, what I think it's all.
Can I get into it a little deeper? I just want to go to the next live question, but I want to go into it much deeper than this.
Sure.
Okay. Amir? Hi.
Hi, hello. I see when a lot of times what happens is when I can't manage my pain, I disassociate, and I'm aware of it, and I try to reconnect to my feeling system. What I see is that it goes through very much intellectualizing. It's not experiencing. Mm. It's just with my thoughts, and I can't feel it. And I would like to know maybe a way how I could just experience it. I tried being mindful, but I see my system doesn't allow me to go there.
Yes, definitely. I mean, the intellectualizing is a part. It's numbing you from, you know, so what we would do, this is very important in IFS. We don't go right for the pain yet. We don't go right for that exile, because that pain, the dissociating symptoms may be coming from some pain that you've experienced in your life or trauma, right?
Yes. So yeah. I could even know why I can't manage the exile. I
Correct.
Can't manage to feel the exile.
Yeah, and the numbing part of you is actually helping you not face that, correct? So I would first ask that, you know, the intellectualizing part and say, are you willing to talk to me? Are you willing to talk to me for a minute, respectfully? Is there something I could do that can allay your fears? That's a very important question I'd ask. And I would also ask it, would it be willing to kind of step back for a minute and let me talk to the exile? I'm going to ask permission from that part of you, the intellectualizing part, if it's willing to step back and maybe, you know, play a different role in your life and allow me to talk to the exile. So before I get to the exile, I first have to get through that protector. That's very important. We don't want to overwhelm your system either. We're very respectful of that.
Right. And I see you need a lot of time to be with your part, to talk to your parts. I could do this 24/7, right?
You need some time to talk, you know, to learn how to talk to your parts and to learn how to arouse the more positive self parts that we're looking for as well, the compassion. So let's say we ask that the intellectualizing part to just step back, and then you started showing compassion towards it and love
right.
towards yourself. See if that would make a difference, help you access, you know, more of the deeper feelings you're experiencing. It's all about self-compassion,
mm-hmm.
not judgment.
Okay, thank you.
So if the intellectualizing part doesn't want to talk about it, or it says it's too painful to go there, I don't want to feel it, what do we do then?
No problem. Is there something I can give to you right now that would be helpful to you, the intellectualizing part?
I don't know.
Again, what happens usually is we give a minute of silence. We let you think about it. We kind of really slow that down. Now, most people will say, okay, you know, I'm willing to take a chance. So that's where the magic happens in IFS. There is a shift that takes place after a few minutes. And then we'll ask it, would it like to go somewhere right now? Could we imagine it taking it somewhere and spending time with it? Or, you know, having it do something else? I mean, somebody that doesn't use that intellectualizing part may want to utilize it differently. If it's being used to protect themselves from the pain, perhaps it wants to read a book or go watch something or take a walk. We actually, in an imaginary way, have it do some pleasant, enjoyable things. So it kind of just reduces its defensiveness. And it usually does tend to back off when we're respectful towards it.
And you mentioned, what's it going to do once it calms down and it lets you think about the exiles? What's it going to do with the time that it's spent till now?
We actually ask it what it wants to do with its time. What about all that energy it's been spending to try to avoid? What will it do with that energy? So we really engage it very respectfully and ask it, what does it want to do now?
And see, what kind of answers do you get? What are some options that it can?
Oh, I may decide to go back to school now and stop worrying so much and use my energy to get a degree. You know, I may start exercising more. I may start learning Torah more as opposed to being overwhelmed by my fears. So we're going to ask it respectfully what it wants to do, and we can maybe suggest some ideas, but people usually know what they like to do if they had less anxiety. You kind of know what to be doing with their energy and their time.
What's if you, the self, doesn't agree with that part? It wants to go back to school, but you're too busy.
Well, that's the busy part. That's another part we're going to talk about. The busy part that doesn't allow you to, you know, enjoy life and have fun. Go back to that codependent personality that was taking care of his or her parents as a child. You know, they really struggle with not having much fun in life also. They're always, if you're a codependent, well, you're just taking care of people most of the time. So you become like what we call a workaholic and you don't reflect. But if I could take that away from you and you could, that part of you would say, okay, I'm willing to step back. Boy, there's a lot of things you probably want to do if you're not taking care of everybody day and night. And people usually know these dreams I had. This is very important. See, when I get to the self, we're actually opening up my healthy child parts as well. Think about a child. What does a child represent? Creativity. Think about a four-year-old playing with his or her toys right now. They're having fun. They're giggling. You know, they like a good cookie or some ice cream. They want to be hugged and held. You know, they want to go for a bike ride. They want to go to the beach and, you know, walk on the sand and feel the warmth of the sand and listen to the waves going in and out in the ocean. So there's a lot of things that inner child in us want to do. But remember, those protective parts have squashed the independence or the, you know, the ability of that inner child to be expressive right now. And we just pull it back a little bit. We start showing compassion and understand the other parts. There's all that goodness that's just waiting to be unleashed. And people usually will remember things that they'd like to do when they're children. They could play tennis. They could read a book. They could visit a friend of theirs. They can go for a walk. There's lots of things a person can do when the healthy inner child starts coming out.
So okay, just to confirm, IFS is really works together hand in hand with the whole concept of the inner child. It's really, you're really talking to that inner little mini you that has all these little fright, whatever the feelings are, whether it's, you know, those feelings. So it's really IFS, inner child. It's one thing.
It really is one thing. I have a course on TorahPsychology.org. It's called Healing the Inner Child and IFS because I put these systems together, but so did Dick Schwartz. If you read the history of IFS, it comes from the Healing the Inner Child movement, these different parts of the self. And there's different ways of accessing. You could, for example, in Healing the Inner Child is a little different. I could use my non-dominant hand to write a message to myself to experience an inner child. But we do a little of that work also in IFS. But for sure, it comes from the Healing the Inner Child world. Dick Schwartz gave it a language, and he gave it some structure on how to do it as well. That's why it's so fun to do with people. People enjoy the playfulness of it. But you need to have a therapist also that's schooled in it, that knows what they're doing, that could calmly get you into a state of self-compassion and undo some of the damage from those protective parts.
Let's go to the next. Let's go to the next live question. Yeah, hi.
Hi. So I want to ask, you know, on a practical level, how does this apply? I'll just say that during COVID, I experienced a very anxiety-provoking situation at work and I do not recall having anxiety prior to that I couldn't get out of. So basically, we were forced to take the COVID vaccine or get fired. And, I was at a point where I was not sure in the 11th hour. I was scared to lose my job. So I went and got the first shot, but because I didn't get the second one on time, my punishment, which I was happy to live with, was a 3-week unpaid suspension. However, they decided that they are going to call that meeting for 3:30 on a Friday afternoon in the winter when Shabbat started at 4:20. So when I'm not supposed to be working. So I just politely said, you're aware that I can't work then. And could you just, you know, do this on Monday morning at 8 o'clock? Like, what's the difference? Right. And I was told, no, what do you mean you leave work early? And I've worked for these people for over 15 years. All of a sudden, because of my lack of desire to take this shot, I was now being told that my religious accommodation was no longer valid. After the 3 weeks, I came back and I was told, like, very, you know, I thought it was more a formality. I was asked to go through a whole process to gain this accommodation, which I was then denied. And it ensued a very, like, I actually felt like it wasn't even current. I felt it was like generational trauma and anxiety in me. And long story short, it felt like they almost wanted to fire me and threw me through this whole process. And they were going back and forth, to which then, you know, I kind of went with the legal system. I filed a legal proceeding against them. And a few days later, I actually was in a car accident and had a head injury. And I actually had another head injury last week. And I cannot, no matter what I do, I cannot get this feeling out of me. And then I can't move past it. And because of these accidents, I've been off of work. It literally took me out of the workplace. My job is still there because now I'm on a medical leave. But, and the suit is not resolved. So yes, legally, they can't really do anything to me.
Let's just stay focused on a question. It's a very long story.
Yeah. How do I apply this to that type of situation?
Because again, the situation is that you were working and the way they dealt with you invoked a very deep feeling of pain and hurt, and you still have it in you, correct?
Correct. Thank you.
And that part of you, is that an anxious part in you right now? What would you say that part is doing to you right now? The part that feels rejected? Yeah, anxious.
No, it provoked a lot of anxiety. Like, and fear.
Right. Well, if you were in an IFS session, I'd have you, first of all, talk to that part of yourself. I'd ask you to ask permission, first of all, of that part, if you could talk to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have you ask it, would it be willing to pull back a little bit, maybe take a little walk with you in your mind or do something else for a few moments to be able to feel some of the anger that you're feeling, what you went through in your job, for example. And what would happen during that session is you would become much more relaxed because you'd feel these different parts operating. But then I'd also have you have more compassion from yourself towards those parts. And they'd play a less role in your life after we could kind of like flush them out and kind of look at them. And with kindness and, you know, with kindness and respect, they begin to play different roles. See, these parts of us, you see, that part within us that has the trauma is not really necessary right now. It was necessary perhaps then. Now it plays a different role. So I'd ask you to play a different role in your life and have it move back a little bit. Just move back a little bit. And when you get in that state of mind and you create some space from it, you could have much more impact on feeling better in life as well. So it takes time to do it, but that's what happens in IFS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, Danielle, let's go to the next live question.
Hi, I'm Connie. Thank you so much for this. This is very interesting. Actually, my initial question was answered, but I wrote down some notes for some other questions as I'm walking. So first of all, like, how important is it to identify the cause of the exiled part? Okay, that's one. And then you mentioned the idea of repurposing that exiled part. And then also using our brain to heal our brain is something that I was cautioned against, because if my thinking is unhealthy, how can I actually make it healthy? So I guess, like, the last part is a question directed at IFS in general. And then the other two questions could stand alone.
Right. So which question do you want me to answer first?
I guess the identification of the cause of the exile, like how important is it to know exactly why there's a part of you that's acting dysfunctionally?
Well, it is important, we believe. But first of all, we have to pull back those other parts that allow that part to come out when it's more comfortable with you. And sometimes that painful experience, that painful memory is not ready to talk. So it could be in therapy that we would decide, you know, the exile is not ready yet. But let's say you were ready. We do want to find out what it was going through. But we also ask it right now, if I could be there with you in your trauma, whatever pain you experienced, what could I give to you that help you? What could I have brought to you then that might have been more helpful? Do you want me to take you out of there? Could I have been the other adult in the room watching while you were being hurt by your parent, let's say, or what you're going through? So it's very exploratory, very imaginary. We actually ask that part of you, which we do want to understand, well, what could I do right now to help you? What kind of resource could I bring to you right now? And also what we do is we ask that exile within you, once we know what it is, to come to the present. Would you like to be with me in the present? Once it's understood, it may be willing to give itself up, so to speak, and come with you to the present, just kind of let it all go. But we do need to understand it, because if we don't understand it, see, the more we repress our unconscious memories, the more power they tend to have. They tend to just, they'll pop out. One day it's a depression. One day it's an anxiety or a panic attack. Maybe one day it's overeating or fighting with the spouse. We really do want to know more about it, but we need to approach it gently through IFS to really get it to be heard in a loving and non-judgmental way.
I guess the reason I'm asking this is because I've done so many sessions of EMDR, and, you know, I'm not in therapy right now, but I have been in for many years. And I know that there are parts of me that I'm still unconsciously, as much as I tell myself, like, I want you to come to the forefront so that I can actually engage with you. There's something repressing it. And, which is, yeah, the reason for the question, you know, understanding the cause. Yeah.
I would talk to that part of you respectfully that doesn't want to face certain other parts of yourself. That's where the beauty of IFS. Now, by the way, I practice EMDR. I'm sure most of your audience knows about EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing. I think it's a fantastic therapy, but I'll add on IFS, because some of the things we don't do in EMDR is ask permission to go into certain places. This is
right. I'm sorry to interrupt. I think my therapist was very skilled, because she definitely had me like identify parts, and she even did things like highlighting them with like a Sharpie. And anyway, whatever, it doesn't matter. I don't want to get into details and take away from the rest of the presentation. But thank you for that.
EMDR and IFS. IFS works together with a lot of different therapies as well. You could always go into people's parts and other therapies. So we can add it on to the EMDR experience. I find it very powerful. You give it a try and see. Perhaps somebody can open up that part that doesn't want to talk in.
Sounds good. And then the repurposing element of it, is that only once the cause of the exile is addressed that then it could be utilized? Okay.
Once it's understood and felt heard and it's not alone anymore, it kind of releases itself, that energy. That tremendous, you know, I want to bring out a point, Rusher and Coach Menachem, that trauma is a very powerful thing for a person. Terribly, it's a very powerful thing. Trauma, if it remains repressed, can be very destructive. It's going to pop out as a part. It's going to pop out as a panic attack. It's going to pop out as a personality problem. But if we can harness trauma and utilize it and give it repurposed, and that's what Viktor Frankl's book, it's called Man's Search for Meaning. If we can find some meaning in it, that it wants to experience, we can unleash tremendous power in our personalities. We can live more vibrant, loving, creative lifestyles, as opposed to feeling
amazing people that we've seen, even in Coach Menachem in general, people that went through tremendous stuff and then they took that experience, whatever it is, you know, losing a child, going through trauma, and talking about it, and then really helping people with it, because they become like super powerful, you know what I mean?
100%. When we learn from Yiddishkeit, when somebody dies, God forbid, what do? We say Kaddish. We sanctify God's name. We also usually donate money, and we build something of meaning. We donate money to a hospital, to a yeshiva, to something of meaning. We turn our tragedies into a triumph by channeling it to do meaningful things. So that's that. I want to mention also how I combine Viktor Frankl's work with IFS. There's also a part within us that is seeking meaning, that searches for meaning. And it was so busy surviving because of the trauma he or she went through as a child, it never could focus on finding meaning. Now I could free it up and say, what meaning do you want to fulfill in your life? And I've watched my clients in sessions. I noticed that they start like smiling. They feel more relaxed. You know, some people will cry, you know, and other people will get very excited. Like, hey, I want to do more in my life. I don't want to be just defined by my trauma. And that's what happens in IFS. That's the real self coming out. It's very exciting.
The question that she asked is if the mind needs healing and you're using the same mind to think of a healthy way of thinking, I would say you need a therapist for that. But if somebody wants to do it by themselves, how does it work with the same mind?
Well, we know let's go back to our chart. We know we're in the self. We know the self is operating when we start feeling compassion towards the other part. If we're not feeling that compassion, or we're feeling that self-hatred and negativity, well, it says we're blended with that part. The self is given over itself and becomes blended with that self-destructive part, the self-critical part. And then we have to have a dialogue with that part to kind of separate it out from the self. Something we work on together. You can notice
when it's up in an anxious place. How do I connect to myself to talk to that anxious place? So that means I first need to relax. But I'm not relaxed now. I'm anxious. So that means I'm in the anxious part.
So what I'd have you do is, first of all, change from I'm anxious to I'm thinking anxious thoughts right now. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
We externalize, we create some space between it. So then I could say my thoughts now are anxious. A part of me is anxious. The other parts of me which are not anxious. I'm going to speak now with compassion in that part and maybe even thank it according to the IFS. For being there, you know, that anxiety part of you is just trying to protect you. But instead of trying to get rid of it, you can say, thank you so much. You can embrace that part of yourself. I know this is very different language than according to other therapies, but when you start embracing it, you start calming down because every part is playing a positive role right now. That compassion goes a long way in the personality. It actually begins to calm down the anxiety. It's just a part of myself. I respect it, but there's another part of myself which is going to lead as well. It's not all of me. It's just a part of me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I have a few more live questions, but again, we're talking now specifically. We just started really the conversation with the person finding them, this inner part of them and really discussing it. This goes a lot deeper with spouses, understanding. I want to get into that soon. Okay.
Sure.
Everybody's asking about the chart. Rav Daniel emailed us all these pictures that he shared with us and go to menachemberenfeld.com. And when we send out the email, we will email this chart. And everything else that he says, okay? Rabbi Daniel, we're going to be sending this out to everybody. Okay, let's go to the next live question, okay? Amir? Hi.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I wanted to know if you talk to the part, how does it answer you? Like,
right. How does it answer you? Well, you see, let's say I ask you to, everybody in this audience now, just focus on some part that bothers you right now, something that you're annoyed about, you're angry, maybe feel sad about something. Why don't you just go ahead and do that for a minute, for a few seconds, you know. Kind of like find it in your body, you know. And maybe it's a stomach ache, headache, some tension, some nervousness, whatever it might be. And so let me ask you this question. As you notice that part of yourself, notice how you feel towards the part. How do you feel towards it? Are you angry at that part of yourself? What's that?
No, I'm just feeling it.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel towards it?
It just feels pain, that's all.
Mm-hmm. We just give it a minute. And just ask it this question. Now, in IFS, we don't force the answer. We let it come out. We let it come up. So that part of yourself which doesn't feel good, just ask it what it wants you to know. And just wait for the answer.
How does it answer me, though?
Well, if you sat there for a minute, it something would come up. An answer would emerge. It would talk back to you at a certain point. But you have to slow it down. It has to be done slowly, with kindness, and it usually answers back. It's quite amazing what people come up with. But it doesn't happen quickly. You have to really slow this down to get a person in that zone. That's what the therapist in IFS does. We create the type of environment for you that you can feel safe to explore these parts. When you get into that safety zone and you're feeling more relaxed, You just ask it what it wants you to know. It usually tells you after a few seconds. It's not what you think consciously sometimes. It might say, I want to be held right now. It might say, I'm really scared right now. It might say, I'm feeling angry. I don't want to face it. So you don't know what's going to come up. But it has to be given a few minutes to experience itself first. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand your question. This is different. This is what was asked before. Why is this different? Manish Tanab at IFS. It's different because there's a bit of psychodrama in this. We take the part seriously as independent realities, as little people, so to speak. And we ask them what they're feeling. And it usually just emerges from the unconscious. That's what's different in IFS.
When I was in therapy, I was told that to feel like what you're feeling and let it be there and feel with it. And then the feeling goes away. Is that like?
I would say that's similar as let the feeling be there. Be there with the feeling as opposed
right.
to fighting it. That's more in line with IFS. Kind of notice uh-huh. it. Notice it rather than fighting it and trying to get rid of it.
Right. That's what I've been doing. So that's basically the same idea?
That would be very similar to IFS, yeah. Let the feeling be. And not only just felt, if you ask the feeling what it wants from you, what would it tell you? I'm not expecting to do this right now, of course. But
that's the thing. I've never heard anything come out of my, you know, like any of those things being said. All I wanted was that the thing should just pass and that's it. Like, I'm not interested to, it should keep coming back to me, the issue that I've been dealing with.
Well, that's, if you look at the chart again, that's the protector right there. That's the manager on the left side. It's going to come
right.
up and say, I don't want to feel it. I don't want to experience it right now. That's
no, I just wanted to leave my body. Like, how do
right.
I get rid of it? Like, basically, the issue.
How do you kill your inner child?
Well,
right. How do you get it out?
Tell me if I understand this correctly. This is just the way I understand. So these feelings that make you feel whatever they make you feel bad and anxious is part of you that's your childness inside of you because something happened when you were younger or something got affected there. When you're asking that part to talk to you, it's not like an actually another person. It's actually yourself talking to yourself. So when
correct.
You're in tune, let me finish. When you're in tune with yourself, and you're calm and you realize you're never going to get rid of this part. It's not like a belief.
Oh, yeah.
Let me just finish. One second. It's more like just understanding it and talking with it. And once you talk to it, understand it, it's yourself. You're talking to yourself. It's not another person. It's not like a something inside of you. But once you get to that point where you could have a conversation with it, then you could, it's sort of like massaging it and letting it feel, come out and be, not feel so protected, not trying to manage it and not trying to control it. So it gets the feeling of safety. So then it doesn't disappear, right? Or am I wrong? It's something that
Correct. It feels embraced. It feels finally heard, this part of you. You're not going to reject it. See, that's the difference in other therapies. We want to get rid of things in therapy. Most therapists will try to get rid of your anxiety. We embrace the part and then the anxiety goes away, so to speak. Do you see the difference? So we don't want to get rid of things. We want to embrace them and have them play a different role. And people start feeling better when you can do that. That's the orchestration of the self. It's a very different perspective than the monomind therapies, which why Dick Schwartz created IFS. It's a very different approach. It's all about acceptance of self as opposed to rejecting the self and getting rid of parts of the self.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good luck with that.
Okay.
I hope it works
okay,
out.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let's go down now a little bit more further. I've been married for 12 years and we have 5 kids. Our marriage has been in a struggle due to my husband's addiction and his rage and anger towards me and the children sometimes. Can IFS help me understand my spouse's parts that will help me accept these parts of him? So the question is a little bit, we're going to a different angle now. So the whole time we're talking about ourselves, talking to ourselves. What happens if you're married now and now we're going to therapy and we're talking about my husband's rage and his anger, whatever his issue is. Now I understand he's really a good guy and he's not a terrible person, but he has these parts that are just very difficult. Well, is that a way how to like, I guess, accept him or just let him be what it is? I guess, how does it work in a marriage when the spouse can understand parts?
Well, first of all, let's preface this by saying one thing. If you're in an abusive marriage and if you have somebody who's raging at you, I don't want to throw them into IFS or emotionally focused couples therapy. It's kind of counterindicated for abusive relationships. So let's be careful. All these therapies work when you're in a relationship which has mutual respect, mutual understanding. It doesn't mean you're perfect. But again, the way you pose the question, if you're in this abusive marriage, nothing IFS can do for you or emotionally focused couple therapy. I can't ask an abused person to, could you turn towards your spouse and use an I message when you're being, you know, being shot at? So it's very
important. Let's just change the question. So basically, anytime it comes to money, when I ask my husband if we could buy something a little bit, he goes like very upset. He gets like very freaked out about money. So he's a great guy. But one specific thing makes him go, okay.
Well,
and I realize now, and you realize that it's coming from this part of him. His parents were cheap. He was born a pike or whatever.
Well, if it's a non-abusive marriage and he's just a bit tight financially, first of all, I want to get him into IFS also. So that's the one thing I want to get this couple into IFS or get him into IFS.
But he doesn't want to be even tighter.
Number two is I could have some more compassion for him. I could respectfully listen and understand what he's really scared about. The part of him which is very scared is usually coming from some type of exile. I mean, that guy is this man that ran the family. Maybe came from a family where there's poverty, or one of his parents was screaming at him all the time, at, you know, telling him not to spend money. I don't know, you know, where the part's coming from, but in IFS dialogue, we teach couples to understand their own part, be more in tune with it, express what the part is feeling, learn about the self as well. We have two people doing that. They're both becoming more aware of those parts. They're not letting any part dominate or attack the other part. You understand? So it's kind of a mutually experienced type of relationship in IFS, something we can just kind of wish away if somebody's raging at me. So it has to be done together with the couple usually. And hopefully the spouse that has all that anger, and then we're going to find out where is it coming from and help him deal with his parts more effectively.
So how does that play a role when the spouse understands that part of the spouse? Like how does that, can the spouse be supportive? Like how does it play out?
Well, you know, John Gottman, who I studied a lot of his works, who is the founder of, you know, a whole school of marital therapy, he says that the most important thing we can do, and one of the most important things people can do, is have what he calls a soft startup. So if your spouse is triggering you and you have this like harsh startup, what you're doing is you're just kind of re-triggering more harsh startup. In fact, Gottman can predict with 97% accuracy in the first 5 minutes of a couple session whether the couple will get divorced based upon this harsh startup. So for sure, if we get into an IFS mind, understand that part of my spouse is angry, part of him may be exiled right now, he's not experiencing his real fears, that really affects how I approach my spouse right now. It changes the language, how I can ask for my needs and also begin to help them understand what they're going through. It's done with more compassion right now. So to answer your question directly, it sounds to me that a part of you is very scared right now of spending money. Can you tell me more about that part? Is that part of you willing to talk to us right now? And perhaps that spouse will engage in a dialogue, but very different from, you know, you're making me crazy, I can't stand you, you always do that to me, to, can we talk to that part of you right now? And let's hear what your fears are, honey. So it kind of changes the spouse a bit, how they approach what would be these managers, these idiosyncrasies that guy has developed with more compassion. I believe cases, the spouse may change because they feel there's some compassion towards that part of himself, which is in fear.
It just sounds like if couples go into IFS together and they're both like vulnerable and open with each other and they could discuss it. It sounds like when the next one of these triggers come up, like there could be so much more compassion and support. And they, cause what happens is one triggers the one and then they
can. Correct. Well, you're going to trigger, he's going to trigger a part within her that doesn't know how to speak up for herself. Let's say. So we're going to deal with that part as well. So yeah, we need to get them into this, the self more, both of them into their self. The compassionate self, the curious self, to start exploring these things. And I could do that in therapy with a couple. It takes maybe a session or two, but couples that are willing to do it will really benefit from IFS therapy together as well, listening to each other's parts and so on.
It's very important for people to hear that, you know, if a spouse, you want to change your spouse and you're going to start doing IFS on them, it's not going to work out. You know, you both have to be in the right zone, in the correct zone, to be able to listen to each other and to hear out the parts.
Yeah, it depends how severe it is. If you have a spouse which is moderately having problems, but you can still negotiate with them. So if IFS may help you help them. But if you're dealing with somebody that has very intense problems, let's say almost abusive problems, then very hard for IFS to work in that environment.
Well, most therapies are going to be difficult with that in the marriage setting.
I'd agree with that too. You know, so it depends on the nature of the case. And I do see a lot of very complex couples that come through with all types of addictive disorders and anger issues and, feeling, unloved parts of themselves. And if you have two people that are basically willing to talk about these things, we can really help them through IFS and other therapies. But if they're so tight in their emotions and so aggressive, sometimes it's hard to do that unless we can work with somebody individually and then bring them back to the couple session.
So I know we spoke about it a little bit, but I want to have a little more clarity. When we go back into the example, the person running late to the airport, that anxiety. So, okay, fine. They have a conversation with it. They say, okay, what do you need? Let's play it out. I'm going to play it out with you. Is that okay?
Sure.
Yeah. So I'm talking, okay, so why am I so nervous about going to the airport? I have a conversation. Are you nervous? You're going to miss the flight. What could I do for you? And the person, I would probably hear myself say, which the child is saying, like, well, I don't want to be, you know, late and run and then miss the flight and then all my, you know, things. So then I would probably say back, just leave a little bit early. It'll make me feel safer and calmer. Like, don't. So again, am I really helping it, or I'm just doing what it's saying, like in a different version?
Well, you're definitely having a dialogue with it at this point, as opposed to you and your anxiety are one thing. You're in a different mindset, right? Not in mono mind anymore. You're in parts theory right now. You're talking to it. When you start talking to it with a dialogue, according to Schwartz, you're more in yourself. That's where we want to start the process.
Eventually that will get better. Whatever that means, that will get better. So now my next question is, how important is she asked a little bit, Chana, before, and Menachem, but I want to really understand, now how important do I have to really, in parts work or a therapist, understand where this part is coming from that gives me such anxiety about going to the airport because when I was a kid something happened or something happened, whatever. How important is it to connect it to something to try to heal that part? Let's say I have anger, right? Let's say, let's go back to the money thing because my parents were so tight on money, I'm very scared to spend. How important is it, A, to make that connection, and B, even if I make that connection, do I really have to heal that part, or I just have to have the continual conversation to work with that part?
Well, you want to update that part within you. That part played a role in your childhood where you felt defenseless, had no control of your environment, or people were yelling at you perhaps. I'm not sure where that part comes from. So you definitely want to talk to that part of yourself and update it now, because right now you don't need to do that anymore. There's no one yelling at you right now. There's no one attacking you right now. There's no one shaming you right now. So that part, you want to thank that part compassionately, and thank it for playing a role. You want to update it. You know, I'm the adult right now. I can take care of you. I'm a responsible adult. I will take care of you. Do you see the difference right now? I'm going to be here taking care of you. You don't have to worry as much as you used to worry. So really updating, you know, it's interesting. We talk about in EMDR and we talk about IFS, that part of yourself has an age as well. When I ask you that question, focus on the part that bothers you right now. Find that part in your body. Notice how you feel towards it. The next question we'll ask in IFS is, how old does that part think you are right? How old does that part think you are? And you're going to find it amazing things. People are in their 50s and 60s. Yeah, that part thinks I'm 7 right now. Wow. It's amazing when you do this in IFS. And what we discovered in trauma therapy is we are usually, that part of us is as old as the trauma. It got stuck at 7, but now I'm 47. Here I'm 40 years later, still responding with anger or fear. It needs to be updated. We want to talk to it. Say, you want to join me in the present right now? I can help you right now. I'm the adult right now. I can hold you. I can take care of you right now. You're no longer, powerless. You're no longer powerless. I have some power right now. I have a credit card. I can take a taxi earlier. I can do things that are more, you know, responsible. You're not helpless anymore. So we're updating its older feelings of helplessness to feelings of adult-like empowerment. There's the self coming and healing the inner child.
Here's a interesting, a little bit of a heavy question that came in. Now that you're mentioning different parts and I see different parts of myself, there's one part of me that is fed up with this culture I'm brought up in and maybe with all of Yiddishkeit. I don't feel a connection. I don't really see the purpose of it all. How can I deal with that? And I guess to understand what part is that?
I think it's such a fantastic question. I have a client right now. I'm going to mix up his age, all the types of information. So you don't know who it is, of course. I have a client now who's suffering terribly. And he is going into a high profession. He scored very high on some tests right now. But he came to me He told me his whole, you know, his whole background. He's a yeshiva shagai, went to a few yeshivas, went to Eretz Yisrael, came back. And during his last yeshiva, absolutely dropped his Yiddishkeit. He went on to study for his profession. This guy told me he finished 21 mesechtas. He was a guy always on time for davening, always on time for learning. And this guy recalled a time in his life where he was sexually abused by somebody. There's the exile in that person. This guy, if you met him, is the nicest guy you met in your life. Sweet, friendly, loving. He only wears a yarmulke for his parents in the house. He goes out on Shabbos and starts texting people on his cell phone. He lives two different lives. So I started asking him about these different parts, and I used the language. I said, you know, there's a part of you which was really hurt. Are there other parts of you that like Yiddishkeit, that like what you're doing, that enjoy? And the guy likes to get the schmuck from learning. He's not, he didn't forget his, he doesn't hate learning. He really hates this person that hurt him, who sexually abused him. But you see, what happens in trauma is we tend to generalize from prot to klal. So the prot, somebody hurt me, becomes everyone will hurt me, system hurt me. So this IFS works like magic. So can we find other parts within you that does like being Jewish, that does enjoy keeping mitzvahs, that likes Shabbos, that likes kashrus, that likes learning, that likes yontif? I want to discover different parts. So as opposed to looking at a person religious, not religious, there's different parts. There's a religious part. There's a part that yearns for meaning. There's a part that enjoys it. There's a part that's very hurt. So the very lushan that I use in IFS really helps a client like the one I'm mentioning right now. It's not Yiddishkeit yes or no. It's just some things I like and some things hurt me in the system.
And let's try to walk through ideas for such a person, how he can get back to some empowerment.
Exactly. Let's try to find out other things we'll discover. When you talk to, one of the things I ask my clients when I meet them, and it's usually a bit strange because they're talking about their depression, their anxiety. I say, what are the type of things you like doing when you're having fun? And when was the last time you had fun? And they could tell you things. They could tell you exercising, I felt better. Visiting friends make me feel better. So they're really giving me the keys, these other parts of themselves. So I'm going to talk a lot about in therapy, well, how can you exercise more? And can you pick up the phone and call your friends more frequently? So I'm going to look for those other healthy parts and bring them out into the front of the session and see if they could focus on those healthy parts. So parts theory really helps people break down and get out of that monomind and start finding resources they just buried for many years.
And we could ask the part that was hurt what it needs from us now. And
100%.
The example that you brought up is pretty heavy. To be able to heal that with IFS.
Well, I haven't gone there with him yet, but when I get to that part that was sexually abused, I'm going to ask that part, is there something that could have helped him then, that he needed then, that you could bring to him, if he was there with you? And now again, this is imaginary. If he was there and he could tell the perpetrator stop, just imagine, how would that make you feel right now? And you could tell that part of yourself, I'm going to be there with you. You don't have to worry anymore. It's never going to happen again. I'm going to take care of you. I'm here for you. So that's what we'll probably do with that exile. But again, in the case of sexual abuse, we got to go really slowly. We don't move in fast. Those really painful exiles, those raw spots, so to speak, we do with tremendous respect. And he's too involved in his protectors, his rigidity, his anger, his depression and other things. To talk to his exile yet. So I haven't gone in there for the exile. We're still dealing with those protective parts that keep them away from feeling things.
Mm-hmm.
But they can be healed. I want to mention this thing. We have this term post-traumatic stress. Ready for this? We also call it post-traumatic success. Because when I tell my clients they could overcome the worst of traumas, if they're patient, and I'll spend a lot of time helping them, they feel so relieved. They feel so incredible. Like, yeah, I can get over this, even though I don't want, yeah, you can get over it. Now, not in all cases. Again, very respectfully. People can overcome, you guys mentioned it before, people can overcome very terrible trauma. Look at Viktor Frankl. For those of you who know his book, Man's Search for Meaning, he went through Auschwitz. He lost his wife. He lost both of his parents. You could read about it in the book, Man's Search for Meaning. What did he do after the war? He could have fallen apart. He could have committed suicide after Auschwitz. he goes back and he writes a book called Men's Search for Meaning. And that book changes the lives of millions of people. The Library of Congress calls it one of the top 10 books of the 20th century. So here's somebody that could have fallen apart. And I mentioned the power of trauma. He takes that power that could destroy somebody. He spends his whole life teaching people how to do what? How to find more meaning in their lives. So we could really, you know, and you mentioned, Oshra, I think somebody mentioned before, people, you remember people that went through horrible times are able to pick themselves up? You meet people like that. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, we had some of the people on the share, some amazing people.
It's unbelievable. And so people can take trauma with some guidance, whether it's IFS, EMDR, and logotherapy, Viktor Frankl. I've watched people do remarkable things. Even, you know, I have cases of people at stillbirths that I've helped go on to form organizations, help other people at stillbirths, but people that were in car accidents. You know, there's many examples out there of people. And you'll also notice there's a lot of famous people in the world, leaders of Am Yisrael and others, that were able to transform their trauma and to lead Klal Yisrael. So there's many examples of how we can turn a tragedy into a triumph with some therapy as well. So there is hope.
Okay, I know we touched on this again, but somebody sent in a question. I've done a lot of inner work in Baruch Shem, I'm in a better place. However, sometimes I find myself feeling so lonely, like I'm missing something internally, a deep sense of confusion. It's hard to explain the feeling, just a sense of loss. What is that part? What is that part?
It could be a part of emptiness. Viktor Frankl calls it the existential vacuum. It could be that part. It could be a lonely part that's still longing for some connection with somebody. Someone I don't, you know, from the question, I don't really know, but if that person was my client, I'd explore, I'd ask that part of themselves that still feels that loneliness to notice it in the body, how you feel towards it, and ask.
I have to pause you. Somebody said tonight is the yard site, the Klosenberger Rebbe, and the Klosenberger Rebbe is the example of somebody who went through tremendous, lost his whole family, his kids and everything, and what he made from that. Anybody read the Klosenberger Rebbe's book? Unbelievable. So I just wanted to mention that.
Wow. And that part of that person, I'd ask the lonely part, I'd ask it, you know, what does it want me to know right now? What can I do for it right now? And people will, that part will give an answer, usually. It'll help them.
It wants to have connection. It wants to have connection with other people.
It could be. And how can we get more connection would be the question in therapy right now. How does that part connect to other people?
Social anxiety. I can't make that phone call.
Well, a part of you has social anxiety.
Oh.
So we'd ask that part if it would step back for a minute, give some space, and allow the self to make that phone call, you know, right now. What would it take? But first, ask to step back the anxiety. You have to notice it, create some space, and talk to it and respect it. You know, that part that's scared to call up other people, you could ask it where that's coming from. It probably came from an exile where they may have been. You know, it's unbelievable. If you had somebody once in your life that was rude to you, all of us here have had a teacher that said something kind of mean to us, and it kind of rings throughout your life. I don't know if you've had that experience. I found in trauma therapy and working with my clients, like one person said one thing to you 30 years ago, it's still true today in your mind, right?
That's his drive. You know, if the teacher said they're not going to be successful, then they're pleasing or they're overworking.
Well, that's the teacher's part, perhaps. That's, you know, became your part.
Their whole life, they're walking around with that voice.
Yeah. Somebody could have been critical of you as a child about something important, and your whole life you're criticizing yourself. You just don't know, you know, where that voice is coming from. It's probably there. You just have to start talking to it. And I find people, when they talk to these parts, they start going, oh, this part's been there for so many years. I don't want that part to play such a domineering role. I'm willing to listen to other parts or respectfully ask that part to kind of back off and give me some space to experience other things. It really frees them from that insult that they got many years ago.
But I think it's important to mention, like we mentioned till now, the compassion, to be able to listen, because many people, they're in pain. They were just going to get rid of it. Okay, let me talk to that part. Okay, stop. If you're in that mode, then you're in the wrong place to do IFS.
Well, I think, Coach Malachi, you'd be great at IFS because you speak with such compassion.
Thank you very much. But
right.
I think when people want to do self-help,
turning into a,
they have to realize that just to do it because you're in pain and I want to get rid of it and I want to talk to the person and just want to, you're missing that, like, you know, what I hear from you, Rabbi. You know, if somebody's sitting in the therapist's room, they can guide it. Wait. Don't run. Give it some time.
Exactly. But the way you're speaking so compassionately is the way we'd speak to our clients. And then they feel that compassion from the therapist. Then you ask them to share that compassion with themselves. It's a wonderful feeling when you get the right person to, with the right amount of compassion, you start doing that to yourself more frequently. The critic inside starts calming down when it hears more compassion.
Very good. Here's a question. My struggle is with my kids that are struggling with Yiddish guides. Mm. One of them is completely not observant anymore. How can these concepts that we're discussing tonight help me and help them?
Well, in terms of her, you know, helping the parent, the end result is we want that parent to be free of shame. They're probably feeling some shame, maybe a feeling of disappointment. And I'd have them look at other parts of themselves, which are loving and caring, and they tried their best with their child, so to speak, to have a little more compassion. I mean, there's so many forces in the world which pushes kids towards that, you know, at-risk behavior today. The culture around us, our cell phones, we could be great parents. Our kids, we could filter our kids' phones today, you know, and do everything we can to protect them. But somebody else shows them their phone that isn't filtered, and they get damaged and they feel terrible about themselves. So, you know, we want to help the parent listen to themselves, deeper parts of themselves, respect that shame part and ask it to listen to it, ask it what it's feeling, ask it to pull back a bit, to allow the self to emerge, because really the child just needs a lot of love and compassion. And then the child needs somebody to talk to, let's say using IFS, to talk about these different parts. I mean, every kid is good, right? Ultimately, when they get started, but something happened to that kid along the way that you couldn't control. And so we want to talk to those different parts of that child as well through IFS. We want to ask the child, you know, what's it rejecting? That rejecting part in the self, where is it coming from? What is it feeling like right now? And then we're going to get to the exile of the child. So assuming that every child is a good child, where did the breakdown begin in the child's life? You want to talk to those parts. That's the exile we're going to find out. No one leaves Yiddishkeit unless they're really traumatized by something usually. Few people leave Yiddishkeit for philosophical reasons. Most people leave it just from my perspective, because they're hurt by somebody. So in IFS, we could find out, you know, where did the hurt come from and actually talk to that person. They usually tend to heal when the exile is talked to. We just have to get them in the room or give them an IFS book to start. You know, I would suggest No Bad Parts might be a book a parent could give their child to learn about. And even the title says No Bad Parts. Like, I accept all of you. And you've had some great guests on the show, like Shimon Russell and others. And, I mean, we're all saying the same thing. We have to get into a deep sense of acceptance, of compassion. The one thing that may heal our children is if we can get into that state of mind, less critical. It's the only way to bring them back is through love, through ropes of love. Mm-hmm. That's how we do it, through more compassion to the different parts of them.
Yeah. You know, somebody wrote, the parts concept, I feel, is basically saying that every person is a good person besides there are bad parts in them, which means everyone could do whatever they want in a certain sense. Oh, that's just their bad parts. Is that like a cop-out way of looking at it?
Yeah, Chas v'Shalom. We're not saying go do bad things because it's a bad part and wants to act out right. No. We have to be, you know, we have to be ethical and responsible as well. But we want to understand, you know, why does that bad part want to do what it's doing right now? That's what we want to understand. We don't want it to continue doing it. We want it to do something different with its time, with its energy. We want to redirect it. But again, the IFS language, let's first understand the bad part, which she's saying is the bad part. Ask it what it's feeling. Ask it what it wants you to know. Get some more knowledge about it, and then you can more successfully deal with it. But we shouldn't say that, oh, I just have the bad part, just let it go. We don't agree with that. That's not going to be helpful in the long run.
The question is, you know, for most of us growing up, I think most of us grew up knowing that we have a Yetzer Tov and a Yetzer Hara. So is that part of these parts that we're discussing, that everybody has, you know, basic concept of one part telling him to do good, the other part's telling him to do bad, or all the desires that he wants to do?
Well, the worst scenario is just because I do an Avera and I think I am the Avera, right? It's like I am my anxiety. That's like the DSM, spiritual DSM, I am my Avera. And think about kids on the internet and think about kids getting into trouble. And they do experience that terrible shame, right? It's not just I did something wrong. It's that ultimately I am bad, mm-hmm. correct? Mm-hmm. So we do, that's, IFS works really well with these types of kids and people feeling terrible guilt as a part of you was in trouble. Part of you needed to do something. See, addiction or Veras, we want to say, are there to answer some question. How do I get rid of my pain? So I can look at addiction as a failure, or I can look at it as coming from pain. I think most of Veras come from pain. They don't come from people being bad. They're trying to get something that they shouldn't get because they're not feeling good. So we want to listen to that. We want to get into dialogue with that. This is what Schwartz was saying. If we respect it and understand it, it tends to calm down.
Well, they have especially what happened to the Yetzirah. Yetzirah is pushing a person to do, you know, things that are wrong.
Yeah, but usually it's pushing a person, from my perspective at least, it pushes people to do something wrong when they're feeling bad, which, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're going to talk about. It's coming from a feeling of worthlessness, being helpless, or feeling terribly unlovable or out of control or can't control. That's where it's ultimately coming from. As a therapist, I want to find out where is it coming from right now. It's coming from pain. It's coming from a negative self-belief usually or damaged part within that person. So I want to help them understand where it's coming from. But again, in IFS, once it's understood, it tends to calm down. It will not be as damaging once it's understood. Now, the Gemara gives some great examples. If a person has anger, what does the Gemara say? It says, become a shaychet. That's a perfect example of where we're rechanneling that energy. What's that?
The energy.
The energy. It's tremendous energy. Nefesh Bahamas, as we call it in Chassidus, is tremendous energy. We don't want to look at it as terrible. It's just tremendous energy. What I do with it, it could destroy me, or I can harness it to become a shaychet. I can harness that intellectual energy, which shuts me down from feeling things. Now I could free it up to finish the Masechta and Shas. So again, we want to help our clients. This is very important. Therapy is not just about taking away the bad. We want to help them do more good. And that's why I focus a lot on my therapy with Viktor Frankl and Man's Search for Meaning. Viktor Frankl said that therapy, logotherapy, or the therapy of meaning, comes to complete other psychotherapies. Meaning, once I've taken away the pain, then I'm still left with this vacuum. What do I do with all this new energy? So now we want to turn the therapy into discussion. How could you use your energy more effectively? What good do you want to do? Connecting to others, loving someone, experiencing something. And according to Frankl, when facing inescapable suffering, we could still change our attitude. So maybe one wants to change their attitude towards something in life. So once we remove the bad, we also need to get them toward utilizing the good as well. IFS fits beautifully with logotherapy and the therapy of meaning.
Okay, let's go to a live question, okay? Hi, Amir.
Hi. I'm a little embarrassed, but I'm going to be transparent. I was listening to the lecture tonight. First of all, I can't even say how much kritik I get from these lectures every Sunday. But I realized maybe it could be helped with, you know, your IFS approach. I'm an adult many times over, and I have a terrifying fear of being alone, like at night in a house. Terrifying fear, almost like embarrassing. It happened tonight again. I was alone somewhere, and as I was thinking about the lecture, I was thinking, yeah, I know it's a child part. I kind of can maybe remember when it happened that I was very scared, and yeah.
And that little child part of you that felt very scared, if you were to speak to it right now, which I'm not asking you to do because we don't have enough time, but if you were to speak to it, what do you think it would want from you right now for it? What would it like you to do for it right now? That part of you which is scared. What does it need?
It's such a terrifying fear. I can still feel it. I don't think I was aware as a child It could be because I'm in therapy and I'm, you know, being pushed to let myself feel, but there is such a terrifying fear. You know what? If I'm not embarrassed to say, I, there's sometimes like this fear of like, when I was maybe like 12 or 13, besides having gotten very scared being alone in a place and something happened, there's, my father had me read like, Kava Yusher and, which other Mr. Seifert as a 12 or 13 year old. And it's literally today this feeling was, maybe there are Shaidim and Ichas here in this place where I am. I'm an adult many times over, like, and it's like, I never thought about it this way. I was listening to the lecture and then I said to myself, you know, maybe you could get help for this. Like, this isn't normal.
Yeah. And if you were to ask that part of yourself that was alone and scared, what it needs from you now, what do you think it would say? Just take a second. What does it need from you?
Right now? What came up for me when I was thinking about it was, I know that my father didn't mean bad, but I would never tell my 12 or 13 year old to read things that I don't think it's for a child that age. And like that part of it is like literally afraid that are like bad dichas. Like, I mean, it's embarrassing. I sometimes when I want help, I'm like, okay, I don't care. You know, I'm going to ask.
Let me just clarify his question. You're going back into the logic about what you wouldn't do for your kid. But right now, you talking to that fear yourself. What would that fear tell you that it needs from you now? Not about your kid, about you.
There's a real fear. There's a real, real, real fear.
Now, if you could talk to it and ask it, what does it need? What does it need to feel safe or better? What would it talk
to
it?
If you could go back to that room, I think you're referring to a room or a bedroom you were raised in where you were scared. If you go back in right now and if you're talking to that part and you would
ask. It was a house that was like a haunted house. And we once had, like, I was 12 or 13, my parents went away. I was babysitting. We had a cat come in from the basement. And I also think the part of reading about Shaidim and Ichas, it sounds crazy, but today it clicked. It's like, that fear, the aloneness, the fear, and I've had trauma. I've had other trauma too. It's still in my heart. When I maybe stopped thinking in my brain for a second, I probably needed one of my parents to be there and to hold me and to calm me down. But that never happened as a child.
So could I ask you to imagine for a second, Unit, for a moment, have those Shindalids, ask them if they're able to pull back for a minute and maybe put them, ask if they'll sit in another room for a minute. Can you ask them? See what they say. What?
It's a perspective.
It's a perspective.
Yeah.
So let's say that they're able to sit in the other room for a few minutes and do they have permission? Are they going to give you permission to talk to you, that scared part of yourself? Would you let them? Just for a minute.
I can't even think. This has been like a fear that is like, I can't explain it.
Right.
25 years of therapy.
Still in that room.
If it's still, you're telling me to put it in another room. It's like opening my brain to a perspective that maybe it doesn't have to be me. Like, it's kind of like where I am this like terrified thing, my whole being. Like maybe I can get some distance, some perspective.
Kol Halashon.
Can you feel that distance and perspective just a little bit? 5%?
Yeah. When you asked me to put it into the other room, that's what came up for me. Maybe it's like, like you're saying, a part, not just my whole being is like one piece of like terror.
Unless you started like sounding a little happier now, just wondering, and how do you feel towards that part of yourself that's giving yourself a little more space. How does that feel to create some space from it right now?
If I want to be honest, there's a lot of rage. There's a lot of rage.
Another part, an angry part maybe, right?
A lot of rage, yeah. A lot of things that should not have been, you know.
Could you ask that angry part right now if it's willing to talk to us? Just go ask it and just let it come up and see what it says.
What's coming up is I'm terrified of the intensity of the rage. There's been a lot of trauma.
Mm-hmm. What are you noticing in your body right now when you talk about that?
I felt it in my gut. I was able to breathe into my gut. I'm learning to do that. And, you know, let it come up like in some shape or form, like a tiny bit.
So if you just let it be there for a minute, what do you start noticing?
What I'm noticing is, as you're talking about it, that maybe it's a part and not just my whole being feels like out of control with rage.
Just a part of you then, right?
Yeah, maybe that.
How does that make you feel right now that it's just a part of you and it's not all of you? How does that feel?
I feel more like an adult.
You feel
like an out of control. You know, somebody is trying to act like an adult, but feels completely, you know, I'm a sham, you know, I'm going around like an adult all day and nobody knows what's going on inside of myself.
So that you started experiencing that adult part right now?
Yes.
A little bit more? How does that feel? How do you feel towards that part, which is free now to be an adult? How does that feel?
It feels wonderful. I've been listening to your lecture, you know, the whole time, and I listen a lot, and I do a lot of things, and it didn't just happen, I think, this minute. I think something happened from listening to, from the beginning of the lecture. Something started to, you know, about being nice to the parts of ourselves and like, you know, us being like, you know, then I'm not the parts. I think that.
You're not the parts, right?
Right.
That anger, that raging part or the fear part, how old does it think you are right now? Just ask it, how old am I? Point to that part.
An out of control 6 year old.
You're 6 years old, yeah.
I had sexual trauma at six, so.
I'm so sorry. Right.
It happened. I was alone. It was like a little forest near where we lived, and I was there. It was a shortcut. It was upstate and like to the next street, and that's where it happened. And a part of me still feels like that 6 year old, especially the time of the year, in the summer, like this out of control, like feelings and emotions and fear and whatnot. And trying to live my life as a mature adult, you know, trying to get through life when all of these out of control emotions are there.
And if you could ask that part of yourself, if you don't mind, that 6 year old part, if you could be there with it right now, what would it like for you to do right now? To be there with it, to hold it?
Yeah.
So could you go ahead and imagine yourself holding that 6 year old part in yourself? Just go give it a hug for a minute.
See, I never got a hug from my mother, so like I have a hard time with it.
Right. What are you noticing now as you give it a hug, as that adult part of you, the self, is giving that hurt part of yourself, the exile, a hug? How does it make you feel?
If I want to be transparent, there's some things that I've learned to give myself, and in some ways I'm still punishing myself the way my mother was not able to give it to me. She never got it from her mother. In some ways, there's a part of myself that is still like punishing myself in that way, like afraid to, if it makes sense. I mean, I understand cognitive, it makes sense, but
Your mother never gave you that love you needed. She also had lack of love in her life growing up.
Yeah, she never got and she never gave it to me. And a part of myself is still punishing myself in that way. Mm-hmm. In some ways, I learned. But you see, for my children, I was able to give it, learn to give it to myself. Part of myself is still getting back, like the anger turning it inward, if I'm making sense. No, you're saying like, why not give that child a hug? And a part of me is like, no, the anger. I don't know if I'm making sense.
Mm. So the part of you, which is very angry still, right? And then there's a part of you, which is scared. And a part of you, which is hurt by somebody.
Yeah.
All these different parts, right?
Maybe angry why my parents never realized something had happened. And then when my father had me read these Svurim, very high level Svurim, you know, and the fears that were anyway lurking there.
Right. Right. If you let those parts just, could you ask those parts to just step back for a minute so we could talk to the pain? Just go ahead and ask them and see what happens, see what they say.
Murderous rage coming up.
I see. Okay. Understood. Well, I think that's about as far as we're going to go right now in front of everybody, but I'm sorry you're going through it. Hopefully that little 5% you felt is the beginning of a new relationship with yourself, you know, that 5%, a little bit at a time that you could notice are just parts of the self.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, pleasure. Pleasure. Yeah.
Okay, so much to cover. We have just, I told these people we're going to go to them. I know a little bit late, but can we just take another one or two questions from Daniel?
I'm here as long as you want.
Okay. Unmute. Let's try this one. This is the phone call. 9012. Hi. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on.
Yeah, this IFS system is a new introduction to my understanding of split modalities. It seems to me that there are some similarities with like somatic and logotherapy and CBT. Mm. Is this like an integrated system consisting some of these parts? With CBT creating space, somatic, you're focusing on the trapped trauma within. With IFS, you're talking about the trapped exile within.
Yeah.
With logotherapy, you're talking about finding meaning by activating other parts.
Uh-huh.
So it seems to me that they have, various characters of other modalities. Is that the idea?
Yeah, that's a very good point you're making. I mean, Richard Schwartz is a marriage and family therapist. He actually wrote the textbook to my graduate school program. So he's a very gifted therapist and professor. And he built his theories based upon other therapies as well. There's no therapy which exists, you know, just by itself, so to speak. So you see a lot of Carl Rogers, a lot of reflective listening, eye messaging, solution focus, like sending compassion towards the self. So you're going to see
especially
other
with
types
somatic,
of therapy.
I find it, especially with somatic, where you're, you know, focusing on sensations in the body where trauma is trapped.
You'll see that in IFS. You'll see in IFS, we ask you to notice a part of your body. And that's somatic experiencing therapy, which I also practice. But, yeah, it does combine a few different modalities together, IFS. So to do IFS well, you have to know a little bit of somatic, a little bit of Carl Rogers, a little CBT. I don't want to get too technical for the crowd, but you have to know a whole bunch of things before you start doing IFS.
Right. So this is like an advanced modality when you know already the other ones.
I would say it's the more advanced side of modalities. But I think the book No Bad Parts is a great place to start. One of the things Dick Schwartz does in the book, he gives you a lot of exercises to do to find your own parts. So you could do it on yourself through his book. But you want to go to a therapist who's really been trained in it that knows a whole bunch of modalities that can deliver this well. It's compassion, trauma treatment, a whole bunch of things you got to know before you do it.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Okay. Daniel, last live question.
Hey, Rabbi. I've been on these calls years ago,
It's amazing to come back and be where I am today. So all the work that you're talking about, I hadn't done it specifically in this forum, but I have done a lot of self-work, have gone back a lot. I call it going home. So I've really come to accept and love that little girl and take care of her, realizing there's nobody else that can do it. I need to show up for her. That being said, that trauma so I processed, going home. So that's kind of put on a shelf, with love and respect. Now the trauma that I'm dealing with is today. It's live. It's a live abuse dealing with on a daily, weekly basis, dealing with the ex that can't stop, won't stop, losing my children. Showing up and so who's that inner child, who's getting hurt constantly. So you're showing up for the fight. This is, I call it the Ace of Yakov fight. So I'm showing up, but the abuse is consistent and it's constant and not. Yeah. So the need to, a lot of the escape is being that nurturer, as the mother. So you babysit, you take care of children, you become amazing. You take care of your neighbor's kids, your nieces, your nephews. I have Baruch Hashem, a new husband. But the way it comes out is that you end up taking care of the new husband as opposed to one who's there to take care of you. Baruch Hashem, I'm not alone. I'm not complaining. But that pain has nowhere to go. Because if it comes out, a lot of people are very, very supportive and everybody cares. But it's so big. So I end up putting up, I have a huge spiritual spin on it and it's my coping mechanism, but the pain has to come out and there's nowhere to go. And it's right there in my lower back. I know exactly where it is. I mean, look, I'm always doing some, I have a project right here. I listen to audiobooks while I wash dishes. I clean the house. I will never get a cleaning lady because what would I do? If I didn't work from 8:30 to 4:00, and finish exhausted, how would I function? How do you deal with that? It's not yesterday's pain. It wasn't 25 years ago, 30 years ago pain. I dealt with that. It's today. Today's actually her English birthday and when everything went down. It's 12 years for bas mitzvah that I'm not a part of.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. So sorry
you
to hear that.
You smile and you look pretty and everyone's amazed and you're so amazing and you're so great. That's what I can show.
Yeah. Did you just show us a picture? You're drawing a picture or what do you?
I paint. So it's a paint by number. This is my grandparents. I don't know. Did I just leave you?
And you created that yourself? That's your painting?
So I took the picture. I got it cleaned up and then I made it into a paint by number. And I'm working on it. Yeah. I do this a lot.
Right. Well, it sounds like there's this part of you, which is really in pain. And then there's this very creative part of yourself. What's that all about, that creativity? Where does that come from?
The need to do, to matter, I guess.
You feel like you're more mattered when you draw, when you create? You enjoy that?
I escape. I don't know. Like, when you say, what do you like to do with, energy, nothing feels good. Eat just to numb the pain, but it doesn't feel good. It doesn't taste good. Nothing's good. Does it make sense? Like, I really nothing. When I'm working, I'm in it and I feel like alive and I'm good. But even then I need to eat sometimes just to deal with the pain, to deal with not the pain, the overwhelmingness, but yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of pain. I'm sorry you're going through it, in the past. And it sounds to be that it's ongoing, right? It's not just a traumatic memory. It's an ongoing pain.
Yeah.
Well, I think IFS would really be helpful for you, to be honest with you. I can't do much more of it here with you tonight. It'd take a long time. But I think IFS would help separate some of the pain from some of the other positive parts, perhaps, that you're covering up that are not being manifest in your personality. I think that creative part might be part of it. And there might be other parts, which we spend a few minutes, we could kind of uncover.
I know. I'm great. I'm social. I'm loving. I bake. There's so much I do.
But it's that pain, yeah.
the pain is, the hardest part about the pain is that there's nowhere to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that are there with you, they're like concerned, but they want it to be fixed and it's not fixable.
Mm-hmm.
They wonder how it's going when it's not. It's just solid pain. Does that make sense? Like there's.
It does. Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to understand her question. What I understand the question is not like I have an anxiety that I have to connect to my inner child that something happened to me. Let's say hypothetically I have everything perfect. Right now something is coming to me that's painful. Right now, this pain that came to me, how would IFS help with this live current pain?
IFS, we would talk to different parts of how you're reacting to what's going on. We try to separate them out, and our goal would be to give you some space from them. So you'd feel more like the self is running your life in spite of the pain. So that's how IFS would help you. We'd slow it down, listen to the different parts, start showing compassion towards the other parts, and then start healing some of the pain that you're experiencing. That's
okay,
how we'd work.
I guess in other words, I'm kind of doing that already. Spending a lot of time with different parts, but this is one aspect, this part that I feel like I'm there for everybody else, but no one's really there for me, even though everyone loves me.
Right. The caretaking part, You're there for everybody else, but nobody loves you. Yeah.
No, they love me. They love me. They just can't hold it for me. Like you want to be able to take it and put it, like someone just feel it with, just hold it with me. And that's a little bit.
Right. Well, you bring out such great, a visual description of it. I would work through that in IFS with you. That part of yourself, a place to put it. Right. It's a great metaphor. And I'd work with you on that to find a place for it. Yeah. We talk about it. Finding a place. We find out where it might want to go, what it needs from you. The IFS would actually be helpful when you get really stuck, but you'd have to we have to slow it down. You'd have to ask it questions. It would give you answers. We start exploring.
I know the language because I've done it. I talked to it. I'm very connected, but it's just when you get stuck at that point, and now what?
Getting stuck is where IFS starts, actually.
Okay.
And the other thing is Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. Have you read the book?
No, I heard about it. I really.
Can I suggest you read the book and tell me what you think?
Okay, we'll start with that. Okay.
Because it deals with some inescapable suffering like you're going through, like the divorce and the situation
in
the family.
It really is a Holocaust. And I don't want to say it. Sometimes when Chas V'Shalom, someone's children pass away, there's like a closure and you know you did what you can do. But when it's like this, it's like an open wound and it's like, it's unimaginable.
Well, you know.
I play it down because when people are around, they can't drown in it. You know, you're dealing with it, you get it, you can handle it, but the people around you, I always find a twisted way to comfort everybody else. And then you're like, you just want to cry and you're like, I can't take anybody with me.
I understand. But I do think, I'd like you to consider reading the book Man's Search for Meaning. It's a very quick read. It's probably like $5 or $6 on Amazon. Take like 2 hours to read it. It's transforming when somebody's been through inescapable suffering like you're going through right now to kind of come to terms with it and find some meaning in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that will be very healing to you.
Okay, I'll look it up. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Yeah.
Okay, Rav Daniel, let's go to the closing part, okay? Wow, what a shit tonight. That's all I can say. Okay, Rav Daniel Schoenbach, unveiling powers within. Hopefully tonight a lot of people gained. And we'll get into one second. Okay, thank you again for coming out, giving tremendous chizik. I feel tonight was such a powerful share. So much parts that we, not, I don't mean parts like IFS, there's so many parts we can learn from tonight's share and really tap it into ourselves. And hopefully the people that listen to it tonight could resonate with something from the share and read books on it, talk to your therapist about it, go to therapy about it, realize those parts that are good, those parts that are not so good, the parts you need to work on. And hopefully we take it to the next level. Tonight's share is 194. If anybody wants to join the WhatsApp chat, please WhatsApp me at 732-314-1710. Or you can go to menachembernfeld.com and sign up for his emails. Again, if anybody's here the first time, every Sunday night at 9:30 p.m., we have a different share, a different topic. And next week, July 21st, we're going to have two very famous marriage therapists, both from Toronto, Bevram Cass and Sarah Hannah Ratcliffe, world famous therapist. I'm going to break down some key points of conflicts in marriages. People are doing marriage therapy the past 20, 30 years. And the topic is the key differences and points of contention in marriage between men and women. to help us understand our spouses on a deeper level, which will be a very, very powerful program. Please come. Please join. It's relevant for anybody. People are married. People are not married. People that want to be married. People that are whoever, all ages. Should be something very powerful. Please join us. Again, everything is recorded. SalmanNachemBaruchHu.com. If anybody has any questions, you can email CoachManachem@gmail.com. Tonight's share is 194. Menachem, almost 200. Get ready. Everything's recorded, Hashem. You can call the phone number, 732-305-9011. 732-305-9011. All the recordings will be there. Hashem, Rav Daniel Schoenbuch's recording will be there. If anybody wants to get a hold of Rav Daniel Schoenbuch, can I give them your home address, your cell phone number, your social security number?
Just TorahPsychology.org. That's the place to get.
TorahPsychology.org is his website. I'm gonna say your email address anyway. People wanna write it down.
That's fine. That's good.
Rabbi Schoenbuch. It's Rabbi Schoenbuch at yahoo.com. Send him an email. Again, thank you to all the advertising sponsors, Lake Scoop, LN Aero, 5th Central, Chayal Kaufman for JCN. And I'll give a closing, Menachem, and then Reb Daniel. You can wrap up this 2+ hours of deep, deep conversation. So I just want to give my personal closing, my own, 2 cents, whatever that's worth. This is my therapist part. I feel that IFS is a very, you can call it whatever you want, you know, you can call it parts, you can call it feelings, you can call it emotions, you can call it Yitzhahari, Yitzhahari, whatever you want to call it. But in essence, it's really a part of us that's, you know, we have Milos, we have Chosroides. I think everybody has certain parts that are not so pretty, certain parts that are, you know, difficult. And we see it sometimes in our reaction with certain situations. We see it specifically, usually with marriage, it comes out a lot. It comes out with people that are struggling kids or in certain situations where it's very hard to be cool, calm, and relaxed and be very, like, you know, always in that calm sense because it brings out that frustration. And when we have these feelings, we could either try to avoid them, try to force everybody to agree with our shitas and why we're right for doing what we're doing, right? So you get a spouse, you get an argument, you'll logically explain why you were so right for being the way you were or the way you're thinking. But in essence, what it is just avoiding dealing with that feeling. You don't want that feeling, that really wounded 3-year-old, 6-year-old, 9-year-old, to feel any feeling, and you're willing to fight to the death, with dealing with that. So if that happens, you could either continue your life like that and stick your head in the sand, or try to go to therapy, try to get the proper help, try to talk to it, try to really start the process of healing and understanding yourself. And then with that, hopefully within time, you get to a place where you could deal with uncomfortable situations, things that you'd rather not deal with. Maturely and in your right sense of mind, you're so, whatever fancy words you want to use, that you're cool, calm, and content the way you want to be, not the way your reaction is. So that's really my understanding of the goal. And I think if that helped us, Rabbi Daniel, I said this before the show when we spoke, I just feel like so many times marriages or people get into arguments, even neighbors or people in shul, they rub this part and this part gets activated and comes a very nasty side of a person. And that part destroys marriages, destroys friendships, destroys family members, when in essence it's just one not good part of a person. When if that could be addressed and that could be dealt with, and the other person, again, the other person understanding that also could be compassion to that part. It's like I always say this example, you walk into shul and you see this guy who's standing there, he's a good guy, he's a ben Torah, he's a nice person, he has kids, and all of a sudden he's screaming that somebody touched his shtender or somebody, like what's going on? It makes no sense. The guy is like, you know what I mean? He's not a crazy guy. He's, you know, if we could view it that way versus like, oh, he's just a psychopath or I don't want to have anything to do with him, I think it would heal a lot of relationships. It would really give us space to like be understanding to people, understand that they need to work on that. And for the person themselves, like, you don't want to be like that. You don't want to be the guy in shul screaming like a nutcase because somebody touched something, right? If you see that, that's your reaction. There's something wrong, something that's bothering you. So instead of fighting with everybody that you're right and nobody should sit in your seat, try to figure out why it's bothering you so much and try to come to a healing place. So when eventually somebody will sit in your seat, you won't look like a nutcase and be embarrassed from yourself, from your behaviors. So that's just my concept on IFS. Menachem.
Good. Wow. Yeah. Rabbi Daniel, I want to thank you. Tonight's IFS idea, I think is pretty deep. And it's new for many. But I would say it's, number one, a new language and a new relationship with, you know, like we discussed, parts many of us, it's new. And to be able to connect, to talk the language, to hear the answers, and to connect and to forge that relationship with yourself, with all the parts of yourself. It's something new. And like you said, you have to be able to back up, be in a relaxed state with compassion and be able to put it all on the table, have a discussion and understand. And like the book is called, No Bad Parts, No Bad Parts. Just learn, listen, understand. It's saying something. It's been saying something for years. You didn't want to listen till tonight. But tonight we're learning. I have to stop. I could stop and I could listen and learn new things about different parts of myself. And in a way, in general, it could give a person that good feeling of just on this. Until now, I was confused trying to figure myself out. But now it's starting to make sense, you know, this because of that. And now I can have a discussion. Why do I feel this way? Great question. Find a quiet place, quiet room, sit down, make yourself a tea, relax, and ask yourself that question. Let's see what comes up. And if you can do that, that's amazing. But if not, find someone, therapist, connect with someone that you can do it with, and in Mitzvah Hashem, it should be able to help us grow in our Yiddishkeit, in our relationship with ourselves. We should be able to take it to, you know, to the next level, our relationship with Hashem, with us, with our family. And I'm looking forward to use it more. Thank you.
Let's hear what comes.
Well, I just want to say, you know, we all believe here in Hashkacha Pratis, right? So if Hashem created trauma.
That was last week's year. Last week's year wasn't.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
We all believe in Hashkacha Pratis. So, you know, there's a lot of pain in the world. We just saw some big pain last night, Pennsylvania, and there's a lot of pain in the world there. It's Israel and people's lives here and anti-Semitism. But since we believe in Kadosh Baruch Hu, we know that he also created the refuahs. So I can tell you as a therapist and as an author for many years, there's a few therapies which I think can really help people's lives. And I would say therapies like IFS, somatic experiencing, EMDR, and Viktor Frankl's logotherapy, all the refuahs. And as Baruch Hashem, we delve into them long enough, we're going to find a lot of answers. So I want to wish you tremendous success in your show and a lot of refuah by using all this chokhmah in the world to really help people's lives. So good luck to everybody in exploring that.
Amen.
Amen. Okay, Shkoyach, thank you everybody for coming and spending our Sunday nights together. And Mitzvah Hashem, we'll see everybody next week, July 21st, with Rabbi Avram Kass and Sarah Hanna Radcliffe. Good night, everybody, and good night, Rabbi Daniel. Thank you.
Kol HaLashon, a whole world of quality content.